We'll proceed to our final case of the day, Salazar Marroquin against Barr, number 19-1669.
May it please the court, my name is Matthew Kreisel and I represent the petitioner Alejandro Salazar Marroquin. As it stands at this point, the petitioner is subject to an order of removal. If he is to leave the United States under his current order of removal, he'll be barred from returning for at least 5 years and potentially 10 years. The petitioner was first charged with a notice to appear in 2010 with being removable from the United States. Removable can go either way. It can mean someone was inadmissible, meaning they were not ever admitted to the United States and entered without inspection. It can also mean that someone overstayed their visa. In this situation, he was charged with entering without inspection. That NTA was what proceeded before the immigration court when it was scheduled eventually. His first hearing was scheduled for January 10th of 2012, and that hearing notice went out shortly after he was placed in proceedings. About 6 months later, in January of 2011, he received another notice of hearing for February 15th of 2011. So his case was moved up about 11 months. At that point, he mistakenly, through the affidavits that he submitted, he mistakenly thought that his court date was moved back a month versus moved up 11 months. And that was why he missed his hearing. On February 15th, 2011, the immigration judge, after he failed to appear in immigration court, ordered him removed in absentia. The immigration, the government, in proving their case, submitted an I-213 to the immigration court, stating that he was found to have been never admitted to the United States and was inadmissible as charged. The judge looked at that I-213 as all the evidence they had and found him removable from the United States and ordered him removed in absentia.
So what's an I-213?
An I-213, it's kind of the equivalent of an immigration court, of a DHS police report. So it's the government's findings of removability. They'll kind of give a statement of facts that they've made a finding of as they've been going through it. So that was the only evidence submitted of his removability from the United States. The petitioner, immediately after finding out that he was removed, keep in mind, a removal order is sent by first class mail to the petitioner on presumably same day, February 15th. On February 25th, 10 days later, he filed his motion to reopen with the immigration court. The motion to reopen stated that he was mistaken about the court dates, and that was his reasoning for never going to his court date. That motion to reopen was denied by the judge. Eventually, another motion to reopen was filed.
Was an explanation given at that time?
The judge found that he didn't fully comply with the requirements of a motion to reopen. He didn't show exceptional circumstances in showing why he wasn't
Further appeal at that point?
There was an appeal at that point to the Board of Immigration Appeals. They affirmed it without opinion, so they didn't review whether there were exceptional circumstances or whether his circumstances met the needs of the immigration court.
At that juncture, is the petitioner represented by counsel?
He was represented by counsel.
All right.
And he hired counsel immediately after he was found removable in the first instance. So same counsel filed that motion to reopen and then appealed it to the Board of Immigration Appeals.
So when we get, once we get through all three, or we get to the third one and that brings us here.
Sure.
The question that I have for you is it's as much legal as it is factual. Okay.
Yes.
And in a motion to reopen, just a plain motion to reopen, but not a motion to reopen sua sponte. In a motion to reopen, there's time and number bars, are there not?
That's correct.
Okay. And one of the considerations, it may be under the umbrella of equitable estoppel, is the petitioner's diligence, right? In bringing a particular issue to challenge removability. Are those considerations of diligence part of a consideration of a motion to reopen sua sponte?
They could be, but that wasn't addressed by the Board of Immigration Appeals.
I know that. So that gets us here factually, right? Sure. So Mr. Salazar Marroquin is not appealing the denial of the motion to reopen.
He's not.
Right. Yes. He's appealing the denial of the motion to reopen sua sponte. And so one of the questions that I have with that is, why did it take three petitions for him to raise this B2 lawful admission visa issue?
And
the fact that it was not in the first or second motion seemed to, unless there's an explanation offered, would seem to, you know, relate to the same diligence considerations that are part of perhaps the equitable tolling considerations in a plain motion to reopen. But our case law, as best I can tell, doesn't seem to include these kind of diligence considerations when you're looking at a motion to reopen sua sponte.
So, in short, he was represented by the same attorney for the first two motions. The third motion, he had found new counsel who, at the first instance, asked him how he entered and went through those steps and found, through his review of the case, that he was admitted on a B2 visa at that point.
And the time frame between the second and third is?
It was about 6 years, I believe. And so at that time, it was the first instance where he had this new counsel who did find that he was actually eligible for adjustment of status. In the first instance, he would have actually had relief if his case had been reopened at the very beginning of the case. A different form of relief, much harder to get.
So let me ask you the question hypothetically, okay? Just set this case aside for a minute. I'm going to make it absurd, deliberately so, to try to figure out the legal line, okay? So suppose we have a petitioner that files 10 petitions to reopen sua sponte, and in the 10th, for the first time, raises the B2 lawful admission issue. Would it be legally permissible for the court to question whether it's not defaulted, waived, foregone, as a result of a lack of diligence in not including it in one of the first nine?
I think that it would be allowed for the court to do that in that instance. In this situation, though, it's different in terms of In the instance you cited, the court would have stated that it waived that issue after considering the issue and considering the motions to reopen that were submitted before. In this situation, the BIA made no mention of the fact that the first time the B2 visa was brought forth, showing that he actually was ordered removed incorrectly. There's clear evidence that he was admitted on a B2 visa. That was never addressed by the Board of Immigration Appeals, and that goes to the heart of my argument in this case, in that the Board of Immigration Appeals, even though this court doesn't have discretion to review the discretionary determination on whether that was a valid reason to reopen the case, they have to at least show that they addressed the arguments made in the motion.
So how different is that standard of review, do you think, from just an ordinary standard? You're saying, do they have to talk about the relevant evidence?
They have to
build a logical bridge.
I think, I mean, in this situation, they may not have to specifically review each piece of individual evidence, but they have to at least address the fact that this evidence was presented. For the first time, he showed in his motion to reopen that the immigration court actually ordered him removed under the wrong grounds.
Suppose they wrote an order that said the following: we have carefully considered each and every argument presented by Mr. Salazar Marroquin, and after that careful consideration, deny his application, period.
I think that would be closer to what they did here, because they didn't even state that they have reviewed every piece of evidence.
Well, hold on, I don't know how advisable that would be, but is that a permissible practice? Because you'd say, just look at the text of the order. They said they reviewed each and every argument.
It's more, you know, it would raise more concerns the issue would be that it would be unclear that they reviewed every piece of evidence.
Do they have to prove that they did in the order?
The order
we're talking about sua sponte.
Mm-hmm.
reopenings, right?
Sure.
I would think that the order that the Judge Scudder has hypothesized, we would have to affirm.
In that type of order, I think that it just would be unclear. It would be unclear that they did review everything.
So if you're right about that, then what the law would effectively be imposing is either an order or opinion writing requirement, such that the board would have to itemize each and every argument that they considered and rejected. And if not, I think and this seems odd to me, in your view, you'd say that's the kind of legal error that the court had in mind in Fuller.
I think that they have to at least address that they reviewed every main argument that was presented, rather than stating...
if they say that in one sentence, that's legally deficient?
I believe so. I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you, counsel. This time, Mr. DiMaggio, sorry for the earlier confusion about names. So...
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Giovanni DiMaggio on behalf of the Attorney General. Your Honors, the Board explained why it declined to reopen sua sponte, and that explanation does not contain or imply any legal error. I just quoted to you from Malukas at page 971, and hopefully I'll be one day quoting the holding that this Court will provide in this case, because it should be the same. Under Fuller, this Court's review is obviously limited to constitutional and legal issues. And here, as the government notes in its brief, there are no constitutional issues raised at all, and that brings us just to the legal questions that petitioner raises. None of them are colorable. Here's why. First, there's no grave mischaracterization of the basis of the motion to reopen, as the panel in Fuller found to be the case there. Therefore, there's no reason for this court to doubt that the agency considered properly what the basis of the motion was.
That's where I think the ice is thin for you. I really do.
Well,
and I'll tell you why.
Sure.
You can react to it.
Sure.
Is in that order, okay, what's your adversary has a fair point about the first sentence of the second paragraph. The first sentence of the second paragraph is where the reason's given. That's the business about the spouse, the change of status.
By the motion, the respondent seeks.
Yeah,
that
the
sentence?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. Okay,
yes.
But I don't. I beg to differ with what you put in that footnote in the brief, that you can read that sentence to fairly cover the B2 visa issue. I just see him as disconnected. I see him as they're two separate grounds that this guy's raising.
Well, okay. I'm glad you pose the question in that particular way, because what that illuminates for me, Your Honor, is that they are not, in fact, as separate as maybe you might think or as petitioner might suggest. So that sentence says on page 3 of the record, by the motion to reopen, petitioner seeks to have the proceedings reopened in order to pursue adjustment of status based upon a petition filed on his behalf by his U.S. citizen spouse, skipping over the part about the genuine motion to reopen. And the sua sponte holding is, we decline to exercise sua sponte authority as we find no exceptional situation. Now, the reference to that motion that is meant to pursue adjustment of status is exactly the basis of the motion to reopen, which encompasses this B2 point, and here's why. On page 44 and page 50 of the record, the motion to reopen makes clear that the objective is adjustment of status, and that in order to obtain that objective, obtain adjustment of status, he cannot have been deemed to have entered without admission, but rather he must have been admitted as he contends he was under B2.
Okay.
So they're inseparably linked in that regard, and so that's why the court can rest assured, as the government contends in its brief, that the reference to this motion to reopen for the purpose of seeking adjustment of status shows that the board clearly understood what was before it, and that motion to reopen to seek adjustment of status, like I said, is inextricably linked with his whole point about, we need to fix this issue, or I'd like this issue to be fixed, that I entered without an inspection, because in fact, here's this passport stamp that shows I entered with inspection.
If I could just do a quick detour here.
Sure.
know why the law treats somebody so differently depending on whether they overstayed a visa or came in illegally without inspection the first time?
What's the difference? Forgive me, but I'm trying to... I want to answer your question as best
I can.
Well,
here the difference, obviously, is whether the petitioner's spouse's petition can be considered, right? As to whether he came in without inspection or came in with a visa and overstayed. Why is there such a dramatic difference in consequence?
To be candid, I don't readily have what's probably going to be a very satisfying answer for you to offer you, Judge Hamilton, but the simple answer is that the Congress has determined that this is a salient kind of point of distinction for whether or not someone is eligible for adjustment of status. And per the INA, you cannot adjust status.
If I could follow up a little bit on some of the concerns that Judge Scudder was raising.
Sure.
I share at least what I'm reading in that a little bit, because given this dramatic difference in consequence, depending on that stems from the original mistake, this seems like a fairly big deal that I would expect to at least get a phrase in an order. Let me throw out another hypothetical. Suppose his motion to reopen sua sponte said, I've now got definitive evidence showing that I am actually a United States citizen, so you can't remove me. You've got to reopen my case and get rid of this order.
That is obviously not the fact here.
Suppose the order denying sua sponte reopening is silent about that evidence and that rationale. Would we be able to review that decision?
That is a difficult question to answer without an entire certified administrative record before me to comb through and kind of paint the picture for the court. That I think would get to a satisfactory answer. To address something you said along the way in making this question, that you think this is somewhat of a big deal and you expected more.
I'm looking for at least a phrase.
Right.
To satisfy the Fuller standard. I know the government doesn't like Fuller.
Right.
You asked for rehearing in bank, it was denied.
Right.
Maybe the Supreme Court, as we said in Malukas, will change the ground rules, but Fuller's the law of the circuit right now and it doesn't stand alone.
Well, what Fuller did not say, I want to make sure, in fact, it expressly disavowed at page 520, this notion, is that it was deciding whether absent some kind of grave mischaracterization of the basis of the motion to reopen, which for the reasons included in my answer to Judge Scudder, we don't have here, that the board is obligated to say more than essentially there's no basis for reopening. And that, the reasoning behind that, whether we think it's a big deal or not, is not reviewable by anyone, by the court, because sua sponte reopening is left to the unfettered discretion of the agency, and there's no meaningful standard to review that. And I want to be clear as well, in addition to Fuller disavowing that it was deciding that anything more would need to be said in the absence of a grave mischaracterization, Malukas clarified that the holding of Iglesias, which petitioner attempts to rely on in his brief, that the board must give reasons for denying a genuine motion to reopen, does not cross over and apply to the board's decisions concerning sua sponte relief. And in Malukas, the court acknowledged that there's no regulation or statute that requires the BIA to say anything more than denied, and the government shares that position and states it in footnote 3 of its brief.
The problem here, though, is I think I worry that you're focused on the wrong aspect of Fuller. Okay, good, bad, or indifferent. Fuller says that when the board's stated rationale for denying a motion, shows that it ignored a particular piece of evidence brought forward by an alien petitioner, that constitutes legal error. Now, I know you disagree with that, but I mean, I'm reading right out of the Federal Reporter.
In Fuller, Your Honor.
And so that brings you to this sentence.
In
right?
Fuller?
If there's no, like Judge Hamilton said, there's no indication in that sentence, a B2 visa doesn't appear anywhere there.
It doesn't need to because it's linked to First, because there's no obligation for the board to reference all evidence or say anything more than denied. To the extent that it does say anything, Fuller allows us to look at what it said and check, is there any misrepresentation?
And what it didn't say.
That's not our understanding of Fuller, and I'd like to explain that. The only reason Fuller gets to what the court or what the board didn't say and what whether boilerplate is enough to show that it addressed everything is only after Fuller passes through the gate, so to speak, of did the board even understand what was before it to begin with? And the reason that the Fuller panel thought the board didn't is because the Fuller panel noted that the board said, forgive me for not exactly having the quote, but something to the effect that it looks like the petitioner doesn't challenge our credibility finding. When, according to the Fuller panel, the petitioner had challenged the credibility finding. The analog here would have been if the board said, it looks like petitioner doesn't claim to have any potential eligibility for relief from in any kind or for adjustment of status. And then maybe then we would be in a situation comparable to Fuller where we think, okay, is there a reason to doubt that the board even understood what was before it?
See, I think you're not, I don't know you're being fair to his argument. His argument is, as I understand it, I got two grounds that I want to challenge my removability. One has something to do with my wife, okay? The second ground, having nothing to do with my wife, is because I entered lawfully on a B2 visa. Maybe he'll correct me and say I'm overreading the record, but I just don't view these things as just, you know, one in the same, synonymous, coterminous.
The only way he can pursue the relief he wants to pursue through his wife is for him to show that he was admitted. He can't show that right now because of the fact that he failed to show up to a hearing for which he was provided notice. As a result of relying on the I-213, which is based on an interview conducted by an ICE agent, during which interview a 27 or 26-year-old Mr. Salazar Mariquin relayed information such that regarding alienage and removability that gave the ICE officer the impression that, and it was the correct impression, that he was not a U.S. citizen, that he had no claim for legal permanent residence, that in fact he was a native of Mexico, that he entered apparently at an unknown time or place, and importantly, that he was not admitted or paroled. That same ICE individual who interviewed him checked the ICE computerized indices, which reflected that there were no petitions pending at that time with U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, and accordingly recommended removal based on the charge of being present without admission. So to back up to your concern, Judge Scudder, in order for him to pursue the very thing that he has obviously laid out in the government's opinion as the crux of his entire motion to reopen, which is adjustment of status, he must undo that aspect that says he was he entered without inspection, and because he wants to show in fact that he entered.
You're saying just a strict matter of immigration law, he cannot seek status through his wife unless he was lawfully admitted.
Yes, and also as a matter of looking at record page 44 and 50 in particular, which is exactly how he fashions it in his own motion to reopen as a prerequisite to him obtaining the relief that he seeks. So at bottom, what we have here is him asking for reopening sua sponte so that he can adjust, and we have the board acknowledging that that's why he's asking for reopening and declining to do so because it finds no exceptional circumstances here warrant the grant of that relief. I see I'm well out of time. If your honors have no further questions.
Just one follow-up further to Judge Hamilton's hypothetical. In that circumstance, wouldn't the immigration authorities look at the evidence and dismiss the case?
In what circumstance?
The hypothetical he gave of he offers that he was a U.S. citizen and here's the proof.
You would hope so. I mean, his question specifically was in the sua sponte context. And right. To be honest, I can't imagine. There's no more fundamental kind of disruption of the foundation of a removal proceeding than if you are a citizen. You cannot be removed. So in the hypothetical posed by Judge Hamilton, yes, I sure hope that what would happen is, and I'm confident that what would happen is, if they could verify his citizenship, the whole thing would go away. But of course, that's not what we're dealing with here. For the reasons I provided now and in the government's brief, we ask that you deny the petition for review.
Thank you very much, Mr. DiMaggio. Any rebuttal, Mr. Kreiselman?
Just too short.
Any time left?
So, Judge Hamilton, as to your point about whether there, it makes a difference whether someone's inadmissible versus deportable from the United States, it actually is the government's burden to prove that someone's deportable, while it's the petitioner's burden, the alien's burden, to prove that he's inadmissible to the or that he's not inadmissible to the United States. So, it actually is a different burden in removal proceedings. As far as Judge Scudder's question about the B2 visa. This, in going towards whether they did fully explain their reasons for denying the, and whether they misapprehended the reasons for the motion.
Don't go into fully explain. They don't have to do
that. Sua sponte. This is the first time that he introduced evidence that he did enter on the B2 visa. The BIA makes no mention of the fact that this was the first time that this was brought on the record. The government could have reviewed, in issuing the I-213. There was clear evidence he was issued a B2 visa by the U.S. government. That should have been in the records. He was also admitted at the border, stamped. There would have been a record created of his admission. No search for that was done by the ICE officer who initially put him into proceedings. We ask that this court grant our petition for review. Thank you.
All right. Again.